with WPKN 89.5 FM and streaming live at WPKN.org. I believe dialogue is very important for the continuation and maintenance of a democracy. One should be tolerant of all views different to yours. It is much better to use words to settle differences than with weapons. You see, weapons destroy human beings. When all these differing views are put together, a consensus should be found to move the nation forward together for one common cause. At the end of an argument, we may disagree but not become disagreeable. The show is What's Your Point? Right here on WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM and www.wpkn.org. I am your host, Garnet Anthony. Hello, good morning. It's What's Your Point? Right here on WPKN. And it's Black History Month, and we'll do things a little differently today for Black History A month celebration. As part of our Black History Month programming here on What's Your Point, we celebrate the lives of internationally acclaimed South African jazz musician Hugh Masekela and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So hope you'll stay tuned and listen. Okay. For today, my quote: mob violence and injustice have never helped a race or a nation, and because of this knowledge as gathered from the events of ages, we as a people in the new age desire to love all mankind, not in the social sense, but in keeping with the divine injunction, man, love thy brother. Marcus Garvey, the world's first Pan-Africanist, journalist, author, and civil rights leader. Hugh Masekela, the legendary South African jazz musician who scored an unlikely number one hit on the Billboard chart with his song Grazing in the Grass, and who collaborated with artists ranging from Harry Belafonte to Paul Simon, has died at age 78. After a protracted battle with prostate cancer, his family announced Tuesday, January 23. The Masekela family said, quote, "Our hearts beat with profound loss. Hugh's global and activist contribution to and participation in the area of music, theater, and the arts in general is contained in the minds and memories of millions across six continents."
Shosholoza, Shosholoza,
That was a bit of Shosholoza, You Masakila, Lucky Dube, and Lady Smith, Black Mambazo. Over his career, Masakila collaborated with an astonishing array of musicians, including Harry Belafonte, Herb Alpert, Bob Marley, Fela Kuti, Paul Simon, and his former wife, Miriam Makeba. For almost 30 years, Brahiu, as he was fondly known, was exiled from his native country, and almost despite himself, as he struggled for decades with copious drug and alcohol abuse, Masakila became a leading international voice against apartheid. The trumpeter, composer, flugelhorn player, band leader, singer and political activist was born in the mining town of Witbank, South Africa on April 4, 1939. Growing up, he lived largely with his grandmother, who ran a shebeen, an illicit bar for black and colored South Africans in her house. Until 1961, it was illegal for non-whites in South Africa to consume alcohol. Masakila heard township bands and the music of the migrant laborers who would gather to dance and sing in the shebeen on weekends. One of his uncles shared 78s of jazz musicians like Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, and Glenn Miller. Those two forces, the music and the booze, did much to shape Masakila's life. He began drinking at the age of 13. He was given his first trumpet at age 14 by an anti-apartheid crusader, the Reverend Trevor Huddleston, who also was a superintendent of a boarding school that Masakila attended. Was Hugh Masakila with a bit of a market, Uptown Ship with Hugh Masakila right here on What's Your Point as we celebrate Hugh Masakila right here on What's Your Point for our Black History Month celebration. In a 2004 interview, Masakila told NPR, quote, "I was always in trouble with authorities in school," end quote. He had been inspired by the Kirk Douglas film Young Man with a Horn. Huddleston, hoping to steer him away from delinquency, asked what it was that would make Masakila happy. He remarked, "Father, if you can give me a trumpet, I won't bother anybody anymore." Masakila soon became part of the Huddleston Jazz Band, and the priest managed to get one of the world's most famous musicians to send Hugh Masakila a new instrument, as he told NPR in 2004. 3 years later, Masakila recalled, Huddleston was deported and came through the United States on his way to England and met Louis Armstrong and told him about the band, and Louis Armstrong sent him a trumpet. By the mid-1950s, he had joined Alfred Herbert's African Jazz Review in Johannesburg. Within a few years, Masekela was good enough to co-found a landmark South African band, the Jazz Epistles, which also featured another landmark South African artist, the pianist and composer Abdullah Ibrahim. They recorded the first modern jazz record in South Africa featuring all black band. Within months of the Jazz Epistles' creation, South African police opened fire on thousands of protesters and 69 people were killed in the infamous Sharpeville Massacre of 1960. The apartheid government declared a state of emergency and the Jazz Epistles couldn't play together. Meanwhile, Masekela had learned that he was being targeted for his anti-apartheid activities, and he had made friends with a talented singer named Miriam Makeba, who had already fled the country for New York. Masekela, now 21, was scrambling to secure a passport and papers to study music abroad. And his friendship with Makeba proved crucial, as he told NPR, "Let me tell you more," in 2013. She and the singer and activist Harry Belafonte became his patrons and mentors. Masekela had originally planned to head to England to study at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. But once he was there, Makeba encouraged him to head to New York. "We'd always dreamt of coming to the United States, but she came a few years earlier and blew away the United States," he told NPR. So Makeba said, "Hey, you got to come, forget about London. This is the place to be." And she was on a first name basis with everyone. Then she and Harry Belafonte gave Masekela a scholarship to Manhattan School of Music. He had to work part-time in Harry Belafonte's music publishing. That was a bit of Marketplace by Hugh Masekela right here on What's Your Point, a Black History Month celebration. And in short time, Masekela and Makeba became romantically involved. He also recorded with her and appeared on her album, The Many Voices of Miriam Makeba. They married in 1964, despite the fact that their relationship was already tempestuous. Their marriage, one of four for Masekela, ended after barely 2 years. At night, Masekela would go to the city's great jazz clubs to catch the likes of Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Theophilus Monk, Charles Mingus, and Max Roach. He wanted to be a big jazz player in the same bebop style as his heroes, and that's what he sounded like. But several of those giants gave him some solid advice. One of them was Miles Davis. Masekela said, quote, I have a lot of great musical encounters with Miles. And he said, yeah, yeah, you're trying to play like me. Miles was a funny guy. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to be artistic because there's thousands of playing jazz, but nobody knows the S that you know, and if you put that S in your S, then they're going to listen to you, end quote. Master Keeler decided to put Davis's advice to work, to put the bleep in his bleep, and began to develop his distinctive style, a blend of jazz, soul, and the South African dance styles he had grown up with, called Baganga. It took him a while to get the blend just right. His first solo album was 1963's Trumpet African. In his 2004 autobiography, inevitably called Still Grazing, The Musical Journey of Hugh Masekela, the artist called the project a disaster and an unlistenable mixture of elevator and shopping mall music. By the end of the decade, however, Masekela had put it all together and was living in Los Angeles. In 1967, the year of his song Up, Up and Away was released, he performed alongside Janis Joplin, Otis Redding, Ravi Shankar, The Who, and his friend Jimi Hendrix at the Monterey Pop Festival. A year later, his single Grazing in the Grass became a number one hit on the Billboard charts. It was an astonishing success, and all the more so as a toss-off record that a trumpeter recorded with his band as album filler in just half an hour. That was a little bit of Hugh Masekela's number one song, Grazing in the Grass, right here on What's Your Point, a Black History Month celebration. In 1970, Masekela toured sub-Saharan Africa and began a partnership with Nigerian musician Fela Kuti, who had recently pioneered the genre known as Afrobeat. He also worked with the exiled South African saxophonist Dudu Pakwana and began fronting with the Ghanaian group Ed Soleil Sounds. He recorded two albums with the group, introducing Ed Soleil Sounds and I'm Not Afraid, and toured the United States with them in 1974. Partly thanks to Kuti's influence, Masekela began to record longer, more immersive tracks, using electronic effects and letting grooves linger for minutes on end. That style is heard to perhaps its greatest effect on The Boys Doin' It, which Masekela recorded in Lagos with Nigerian musicians. Masekela, a little bit of you, Masekela, there with a song paying tribute to his friend Fela Kuti, song simply entitled Fela, right here on What's Your Point, our Black History Month celebration. In 1977, Masekela's Soweto Blues about the anti-apartheid Soweto uprising was recorded by Makeba, and it reached an international audience after the stupefying success of his Grazing in the Grass. However, Masekela largely spent decades living in a haze of drugs, alcohol, and bad financial decisions, and a string of failed marriages and countless other relationships. He occasionally made music, but he was dumped by label after label, and by his own reckoning, he hadn't played sober since he was 16 years old. In his autobiography, Masekela estimated that he wasted $50 million all told. It wasn't until 1997 that he reportedly got clean. He went on to found the Musicians and Artist Assistance Program of South Africa to help fellow performers struggling with substance abuse. He spent stints living in Liberia, Guinea, Ghana, and Botswana, where he worked and recorded with a diverse array of African musicians, including leading the Ghanaian band Edzole Sounds. He also recorded with the anti-apartheid anthem Bring Home Nelson Mandela in 1986. In 1987, he appeared with Paul Simon on his Graceland album tour alongside South African musicians Ladysmith, Black Mambazo, and again in 2012 on the 25th anniversary of the Grammy Award-winning album's release. Masekela finally returned to South Africa in 1990, following Nelson Mandela's release. In the meantime, some of his friends and family members were on the forefront of the new South Africa. His sister Barbara, for example, became her country's ambassador to the United States. Upon his return, Brahiu was hailed as an elder statesman of South African music, and he subsequently recorded a string of international albums.
I want to see him walking down the streets of South Africa.
That was a little bit of Mandela, Bring Him Back Home, Hugh Masekela, right here on What's Your Point, our Black History Month celebration. And Masekela performed at the opening ceremony of the FIFA World Cup tournament in Soweto's Soccer City in 2010. That year, Masekela was also given the Order of Ikimanga in gold, in his home nation's highest medal of honor. He had been scheduled to tour the United States this spring with his former bandmate, Abdullah Ibrahim, but in October he announced that the cancer he had been battling on and off for nearly a decade had returned. Among those marking his death is South Africa's President Jacob Zuma, who released a statement on Tuesday, January 23. It reads, "Mr. Masekela was one of the pioneers of jazz music in South Africa, whose talent was recognized and honored internationally over many years. He kept the torch of freedom alive globally, fighting apartheid through his music and mobilizing international support for the struggle for liberation and raising awareness of the evils of apartheid. It is an immeasurable loss to the music industry and to the country at large. His contribution to the struggle for liberation will never be forgotten." The iconic musician touched the lives of millions of people across the world and fought bravely against apartheid. Hugh was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2008. On Tuesday, January 30, Hugh Masekela was buried in a private ceremony. Languta Hugh Masekela, right here on What's Your Point, our Black History Month celebration. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a Baptist minister and social activist who led the civil rights movement in the United States from the mid-1950s until his death by assassination in 1968. Dr. King was born on January 15, 1929, in Atlanta, Georgia.
We are always on the verge of being mesmerized by uncertainty, but we must move on. And some of us who have already begun to break the silence of the night have found that the calling to speak is often a vocation of agony, but we must speak. We must speak with all the humility that is appropriate to our limited vision, but we must speak. And we must rejoice as well, for surely this is the first time in our nation's history that a significant number of its religious leaders have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of a firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Perhaps a new spirit is rising among us. If it is let us trace its movements and pray that our own inner being may be sensitive to its guidance. For we are deeply in need of a new way beyond the darkness that seems so close around us.
The voice of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Break the Silence. On August 28, 1963, Martin Luther King addressed a civil rights march in Washington, D.C. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted.
Do you think you're capable of building those human relationships as the country now stands? You're fooling yourself. It is impossible for white and black people to talk about building a relationship based on humanity when the country is the way it is, when the institutions are clearly against us. We've taken all the myths of this country and we found them to be nothing but downright lies. This country told us that if we worked hard, we would succeed. And if that were true, we would own this country lock, stock, and barrel.
That was the voice of Stokely Carmichael.
To join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check,
yes,
a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom,
yes,
and the security of justice.
Yes.
We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hoped that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must fail to conduct our struggle on the highest plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied.
As long as our body is heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city.
We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote, and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution. Yes. And staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. Yes. I have a dream that one day, yes, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. Yes. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. And every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope,
And this is a faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring. And when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
The Reverend Dr. King, with his Nobel Peace Prize winning speech, "I Have a Dream." And due to Dr. King's agitation, President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed the Civil Rights Bill of 1964. Martin Luther King Jr. was in attendance.
"My fellow Americans, I am about to sign into law the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I want to take this occasion to talk to you about what that law means to every American. 188 years ago this week, a small band of valiant men began a long struggle for freedom. They pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, not only to found a nation, but to forge an ideal of freedom, not only for political independence, but for personal liberty, not only to eliminate foreign rule, but to establish the rule of justice in the affairs of men. That struggle was a turning point in our history. Today, in far corners of distant continents, the ideals of those American patriots still shape the struggles of men who hunger for freedom. This is a proud triumph. Yet those who founded our country knew that freedom would be secure only if each generation fought to renew and enlarge its meaning. From the Minutemen at Concord to the soldiers in Vietnam, each generation has been equal to that trust. Americans of every race and color have died in battle to protect our freedom. Americans of every race and color have worked to build a nation of widening opportunities. Now, our generation of Americans has been called on to continue the unending search for justice within our own borders. We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment. We believe that all men have certain unalienable rights, yet many Americans do not enjoy those rights. We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty, yet millions are being deprived of those blessings, not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin. The reasons are deeply embedded in history and tradition and the nature of man. We can understand without rancor or hatred how this all happened, but it cannot continue. Our Constitution, the foundation of our republic, forbids it. The principles of our freedom forbid it. Morality forbids it. And the law I will sign tonight forbids it.
President Lyndon Baines Johnson, July 2, 1964, during the signing of the Civil Rights Bill of 1964. And Senator Robert Kennedy made a presidential speech, but it wasn't the presidential speech one or the audience wanted to hear. Indianapolis, Indiana, April 5, 1968.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm only going to talk to you just for a minute or so this evening because I have some very sad news for all of you, and I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization. Black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own day despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, and a feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black. So I ask you tonight to return home, to say a prayer for the family, Martin Luther King, yeah, it's true, but more importantly, to say a prayer for our own country, which all of us love, a prayer for understanding and that compassion that of which I spoke. We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness, and it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to improve the quality of our life and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. And what dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.
Senator Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy giving a presidential speech, but I'm sure that's not the speech he went to give. And said what we need in the United States is not hatred. And unfortunately, exactly 2 months after Dr. King was assassinated, he himself was assassinated. 2 months after Dr. King. What's your point? Right here on WPKN. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening.
Support for WPKN comes from the Ridgefield Playhouse, presenting rock and roll singer-songwriter Willie Nile and one-man band acoustic guitarist Trace Bundy on Wednesday, February 7th. On Saturday, February 10th, The Machine duplicates the sights and sounds of Pink Floyd. And on Friday, February 16th, the tribute bands Fleetwood Mac and The McCartney Years bring their recreations to the stage. Tickets and information at ridgefieldplayhouse.org.
Attention music lovers. WPKN's Music Mash Record Fair is coming to Bridgeport on Saturday, March the 3rd. We'll have thousands of vinyl LPs, 45s, CDs, music collectibles in all genres, from rock to jazz to blues and soul, from more than 50 of New England's biggest dealers. It all happens in downtown Bridgeport on Broad Street at Reed's Art Space, home to Music Mash 18. We'll have WPKN DJs and celebrities spinning music, as well as food options and beer from our sponsors Two Roads Brewing and Brewport. We'll also have coffee and bagels for the early bird shoppers. Reed's Art Space is just minutes from Metro North and the Port Jeff Ferry. There will be free parking right across the street from Reed's. Hours are 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Full details at the WPKN website, wpkn.org. WPKN thanks sponsors Two Roads Brewing, Bridgeport DSSD, Brewport, SpreadMusicNow.org, and WPKN Independent Community Radio.